This is what should be done
by
one who is skillless in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and non-conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful, calm, and wise, and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise will later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those to be born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any beings in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protect with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking or sitting or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should recollect this. This is said to be the sublime abiding by not holding to false views. The pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, cool.
Well done.
Yes.
We're looking forward to your talk.
Oh, I don't know. My talk is very uncertain. Sometimes it's a good talk. Sometimes it's okay. And sometimes it's just.
I'm sure
sometimes it's just. Sometimes it's just almost no traction or goes all over the place. Okay. Okay. So today's talk. I'll talk about basically the mind state of anger, frustration, and despair. Because the reason why I'm going to talk about it, because 2 weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago, I was invited to go to an art gallery. So I went to an art gallery, and so one of the supporters invited me to go and look at some Buddhist painting. I said, oh, okay, that'll be interesting. So myself and Venerable Sukhakarma from the Cambodian temple. So myself and Venerable and two other laypersons went to a Buddhist painting art gallery. I say, okay, it'll be interesting to look at some maybe old Buddhist painting. So when we arrived there, it's about half an hour drive close to the suburb. I think close to the Swan River. I think in a hotel called Swan Hotel. And there was a Buddhist gallery there. So I went there to have a look. And when I went there to have a look, it's not what I really expected. Because there was an artist that was did some painting during the COVID lockdown. So he painted quite a lot of painting for about 1 year during the lockdown. And the artist was from Taiwan. So when I went there to have a look, it was quite interesting because the theme of the painting was all the different hell Rome and all the people that's been tortured, hang up, cut alive, and when they die, they get reborn again. Then the same thing happen again. So it gives a lot of different stages of hell where people are being tortured due to their karma. So the more I look at this, it was quite interesting, and it explained why they are in hell and the misconduct or the evil karma they did. So I was looking at that, I go, this is pretty interesting. But I think in my heart, I felt like this kind of teaching will really put people off. Because if we did talk about this, if Buddhist monk talk about things like that, it probably put a lot of new people off. Because sometimes life is hard enough and we're going through a lot of difficulty. And the last thing we want to do is to understand why people are reborn in hell and all the causing condition that lead people there. That even the there was a lady there that was guiding myself and my friend, Venerable Sukama, along, explaining what was happening to all these different pictures. And she was saying she had to read about it, study up. And so when she's doing the guide, she can explain to the people what was happening. There was a few people there. So, and she told me that she was getting quite anxious when reading all these things and working out why people are reborn in those destinations. So basically, I just told her very simply, I say, look, if you are a good person, you keep the five precepts, then you definitely guarantee that your mind will not get reborn into those destinations. Reason why people get reborn in those destinations is basically they break the five precepts quite often, like things like killing, stealing, adultery, harsh speech, lying, and just indulging in drugs and alcohol. Yep, because all those behaviors will bring a person mentally downwards. Because I mean, before I was a Buddhist, I used to smoke and drink and try some drugs and hang around friends that was just basically partying all the time. And my speech wasn't that gentle. It was a lot of rough speech because I was working up in the mines. So when I worked in the mines about 30 years ago, people was basically a bit rough. 20 years ago. So, So the Buddha did say, and you associate with the wise people, you learn and you mirror their behavior. But you associate with people that's basically not keeping the five precepts, and quite competitive, fooling around, then you slowly become like the friends that you hang around. So at that time, working up in the mines, basically I just hang around with a lot of rough people. I was basically drinking a lot and basically taking drugs. And I slowly got conditioned into that kind of behavior. And it actually made my mind in a terrible state. So it's only that I decided that I cannot live like this for like 1 or 2 years. I need to break the cycle. So then I came across Buddhism. And one thing that Buddhism taught was basically our actions, speech, and thoughts. It will follow us no matter where we go, this life and the next birth. So it's like the wheel of an ox cart that our action and speech and our mind state, wherever we go, that ox cart will follow us. But if we do good things by body, speech, and mind, then it's like the shadow that never leave us. So no matter where we go, our good karma will follow us, and also same with our bad karma. So as soon as I read that from the Dhammapada, it makes a lot of sense. I realized that, okay, I need to stop messing around with my friends when I was working up the mines. I was quite young at the time, in my 20s, and I decided to basically just practice Buddhism, meditation, and cultivate the mind, and basically change the way that I think and behave. I didn't know much about meditation, but I got very interested in Buddhism first, then meditation later. So one thing that I did a lot of study is cause and effect. And one thing that they encourage to do is to practice metta or loving kindness. So what we chanted just now, the Metta Sutta, basically that is almost the guideline instruction how we should behave towards ourselves and other people. Because when you do that, it brings a lot of happiness and joy and lightness to one's heart. And when that happens, things like anger, discontent, frustration, rage, things like that, it slowly become less and less. Because to the extreme case is... I gave a talk maybe in my last two talks about sometimes going to the prison, and sometimes you meet prisoners are there that have done crimes and they are associating with people that's in for crimes that they did. And when you're in those companies, you become almost career criminals. And sometimes when people are released after they serve the time, those kind of conditioning does linger on the mind. And so I was saying when I was staying in Melbourne, supporting one of my friends and helping setting up a monastery, someone just came over after 2 hours of driving, and he was telling me that, oh, he's just having a very difficult problem at home. A lot of rage and anger come up in his daily life. So I asked him what's happening, and he told me that he went to prison for a few years. And when he got out of prison, he's finding it very hard to deal with his emotion and his memory, and was causing his partner a lot of hardship. So at that time, I was quite busy, and he just came over after like 2 hours driving, asking for advice. And for a Buddhist monk, I find that, oh, okay, I'm a bit busy at the time helping to set up a monastery. What can I do? So I remember a simile of a pot. So I told this person that the pot is like a vessel of water. And when the vessel of water is neutral, when you put a lot of salt in, it becomes salty. The more salt you put in, the more salty it becomes. So that's how the mind works. When we put a lot of salt in, after a while, the water will taste extremely salty to the point where you can't really drink it. But according to Buddhism, if we develop wholesome qualities and let go of the unwholesome memories and emotion and thoughts, it's like adding fresh water into the pot. The more we add fresh water into the pot, then the saltiness will dilute more and more and more. Until later on, you don't get the taste of the saltiness in the pot. So the mind will naturally purify it. So once you purify it, all those past memories, thought and anger and rage will disappear. And it is overcome by loving kindness and letting go. And compassion and forgiveness, especially to oneself. So I gave that small advice, then he left. And I turned to basically just do more study on the internet, a lot of Buddhist information. And I think about maybe 2 weeks or a month time he came back. He came back about twice. So every time he came back, I noticed he became more relaxed and more happier. So that's one of the extreme cases I noticed with people that are in very difficult situation, especially if they have done something not skillful in life and basically end up in the prison system. It's quite interesting because sometimes we joke around, we say Bodhiyana Monastery is also a prison, and a lot of the monks are doing time. So because we have a wall here, and the monks are stuck here for a few years, they're not allowed to leave until they finish the training after 5 years. And so 1 year is a training as a layperson in white, we call it Anagarika. Then you, after 1 year, you're ordained as a novice monk. After another year as a novice monk, then you're ordained as a fully monastic, a fully ordained bhikkhu. And after 5 years, so total 7 years, then you can basically move around and travel around different monasteries and support the different branch monastery. Yep. So sometimes we consider this as a prison, the monastery here. But further up the hill, about 5 or 8 kilometers from the monastery, there is a Kanat prison farm. And a lot of the monks do go and visit there and teach every Friday night. But due to the restriction with the government, due to COVID, the monks are not going there yet. So maybe once the restrictions are lifted, then the monks will go back to the prison system to do some teaching in at Friday night for 1.5 hours. So what the prison officer have told us that you see when the monks go up there and teach, the prisoners are more better behaved and more relaxed and a lot more happier. And sometimes when they get released from the prison system, they normally go back to normal life and they don't reoffend. So Buddhist monks do have some kind of conditioning or brainwashing up there. So it's quite interesting. And a lot of the prisoners, they do come over to the monastery and help with some chores and work. And basically, we just treat them like normal human beings. And they tend to mingle with the normal people, the normal crowd for lunch. And they're well respected. So the Buddhist community do take care of the prisoners that come to the monastery. There is always a prison guard around just to supervise the prisoners while they're doing work or coming for lunch in the monastery. And the prisoners, they like coming to the monastery because they say the food is really delicious. And they treat it with kindness and respect and not look down as prisoners. So all human beings, we all urge that respect for one another. And sometimes it's no point putting down people or shaming people. Because when we shame and put people down, they won't learn. Yeah, and the opposite will happen. So that's one thing I realized when I was working up in the mines. It was quite a macho environment. There was a lot of very competitive and a lot of putting down. So you have to basically stand your ground and be tougher than the next guy. So I did not want to go like live in that kind of mind state. So that's why I chose to be by myself and study more meditation and more Buddhist practice. But one thing I did study a lot was the metta, loving kindness teaching. And that really helped me a lot to basically lessen my anger and my depression in my heart. There are a lot of benefits when you practice loving kindness. So let me share with you the benefit. Yep. Because I can't remember everything. Yeah. So sometimes I have a little note. Okay, so the Buddha say there's 11 benefits of loving kindness. One is when you practice loving kindness by body, speech and mind, you will sleep well. So you sleep easily. Second thing is you wake up very comfortably or peacefully. Yeah? You have nice dreams. Yep, that's true. One time I realized when I practice loving kindness a lot, I do sleep well and I wake up well and I have nice dreams. Sometimes I dream of flying through the air or floating through the air. Things like nightmares and stuff basically disappear. Then you become a human being. So sometimes you're kind and gentle. You tend to make a lot of friends. So when I was in the mine, when I started practicing meditation, loving kindness and meditation, I found I got more friends and people tend to trust me more. And when they go out to party, I go with them, but I will not drink And I just take care of my friends that are driving back home one by one to make sure they're nice and safe back home. Then a person becomes dear to non-human beings, that basically animals, also unseen beings too. It's also attracted to people that is kind. So what I mean by unseen beings is you might have spirits around the place, and if they can pick up that energy, if you have a heart of metal, because that energy, animals also can pick that up. Because when we first moved to Newbury Buddhist Monastery, in the early days, I noticed the kangaroos will run away as soon as they see a human being. Same with the wombats and the birds. But after 5 years there, when we walk around the monastery, the kangaroos just look at us walking past. Same with the wombats and the birds. The birds will fly in, fly close by asking for food. So yes, so animals do pick up on the kindness and non-harm. And I think also snakes, because one time I was walking with one of the shy inspector, and she was saying about the what need to be done to improve our sewage system, inspecting some of the work. And she did ask me, is there any snakes in the monastery? And I looked down and I pointed straight down, just about 1 meter away from me. I say, look, there's a snake down there. And she looked down and she got really, really frightened. I say, no, it's okay. I say, if you have good intention, the animal will pick up. Yep. So you see, they don't bite or get afraid of human beings. But I don't think she buy what I say. Yeah. Yes. And one of the sixth factor is also devas or gods or heavenly beings also protect that the person with loving kindness. That might be interesting. Sometimes you say, is that true? Sometimes I wonder, is that true too? But staying in the monastery for so long, there are a lot of interesting things that happen in the monastery. I mean, the more I stay here, the longer I speak to lay people, guests that stays here, and sometimes the feedback is quite interesting, especially in the monastery, because sometimes we have guests and also other monastic. For monks, we can't talk about our practice, but there's a loophole. So other guests, they stays here, and some of them have good meditation, some of them have average meditation. And sometimes they ask myself or other monks, they say at night they go for a walk or they go in the forest, and sometimes they notice really bright orbs or lights moving in the forest. And they ask me, is it a four-wheel drive or someone with a flashlight here? And I ask him to describe it. And sometimes they describe it's like a bright light moving, like something like a ball. And I ask how bright is it? And they say it's really bright sometimes. I say, okay, those are UC heavenly beings. And UC in the monastery, they do come and visit and check out the monastery, especially in the Apostles' Day night, the full moon night. They are rare, but we have guests that exported them before in the monastery. Yep. So when you stay in the monastery, there's quite a lot of interesting things. But you see, we tell the guests, just keep it quiet and don't really talk about it too much. Because if they talk about it too much, then people might think that they're a bit crazy in the head. But as Buddhist monk, we believe this basically just cause and effect. If people practice well in this life and they have a pure heart, you see the next life they get reborn in a good destination. And if they get reborn in a good destination, then generally they'll continue practicing as a Buddhist practitioner. So one of the seven conditions is a person that practices loving kindness, fire, poison, and weapon does not harm that being. I don't know about fire weapons, but with poison, I believe that is possible. Because one thing I noticed, if you have a lot of loving kindness and you get sick, like food poisoning and stuff, you tend to recover quite rapidly. and the monks to teach meditation at the Armadale Meditation Group that's next to the hospital. And a lot of the doctors recommend the patient to come over for the guided meditation. And what we notice, people that attend the class, they tend to recover and heal more rapidly compared to a normal patient that don't come for the class. And we also know of some people that the doctors say that they only have like maybe a few months or year to live. And they've been practicing meditation for like quite a long time. And these people, some of them, they're still alive for like after 10, 8 years and still doing well. So the mind do have quite a powerful effect over the body. So sometimes instead of having fear, worry, anxiety, we develop acceptance and kindness towards this body. So when you do that, it allows the body to heal very, very well and rapidly. Because when I was up in the mines with a lot of anger and rage, one thing that happened is I get headaches, then my hand shakes a bit, then I get ringing, and my vision become a bit blurry. I got quite sickly after a while, then I'm quite depressed. But when I start doing loving kindness meditation and meditation combined together, then I noticed my eyesight, my hearing, and my shakiness and my headache all went away. And my health improved a lot. So I realized I become more relaxed and more at ease. So it allows the body to basically regenerate and heal itself naturally. Because in this society, people are just overworked, stressed, and too anxious. And that bring out a lot of tension within this body. So when you can relax, then the body tends to heal itself more rapidly. And if we sleep well, then that repair the body a lot faster. Because when I was up in the mines, sometimes I will not sleep for like 1 week or 2 weeks. So my health was really going down rapidly because there was just too much anxiety and wandering thoughts in my mind. Yep. So that's the only thing I can think of: poison, fire, and weapons that's a harm a person. Definitely poison, that is true. His mind become concentrated quickly, and that's quite true. Because people that practice loving kindness, they tend to have the best meditation because the mind becomes calm and peaceful quite rapidly, and they can develop metta nimitta. So what nimitta is the sign of the mind. So when a person go into deep samadhi, the five senses shut down, and what you see is a radiant bright mind. So one thing I noticed, I've been teaching meditation for like a few years now, and I noticed people that practice loving kindness, they tend to have one of the best meditation because they have a very joyful heart and very kind, pure heart. And when a practitioner go into samadhi, they tend to have a very bright, radiant mind. And that's why I believe then when people that have a lot strong loving kindness, so once they pass away and get reborn in the next rebirth, the chance of getting reborn in a higher plane is the chance is way higher than someone that don't practice loving kindness. But when you're kind and gentle and forgiving, then your mind would roughly incline that direction. Mm-hmm. And the ninth condition is his face and complexion become more serene. So become more relaxed. So one thing I notice when people are staying in the monastery, as they become more calm and more peaceful and more relaxed, you can see their face become more smooth. Because I noticed with our lay guests that come here and stay for the three months range retreat, they come back, their face is a bit tired, a bit wrinkly, and they look a bit worn out. But after 3 months staying in the monastery, practicing, when they're about to leave the monastery, I noticed they look a lot younger and a lot more happier. and more radiant. They are more have a radiant face. Yes, and one when he dies, the tenth condition, when a person dies, he's not confused. So so a person that practices a lot of loving kindness, when a person passes away, he does not pass away with a mind that is confused and afraid, because the person is more at ease and more relaxed. So when Buddhist monk, when we go and see our old Buddhist practitioner in nursing homes or in they call palliative care, when they have the last stages in their life. I noticed one time I went to see this old striking lady, and she was in the 80s and she was dying from old age and sickness. And every time we go and visit her, she always looked radiant and happy and quite sharp in her mind. I was very happy to see the monks. So we give a blessing, then we go back, then she end up leaving. Then we did it about 3 or 4 times before she passed away. And I noticed she was always very quite radiant and sharp in her mind. But everyone else in the nursing home seems very lost and confused, and a lot of fear and worry in their face. Yep. So when you practice loving kindness, you tend to pass away more peacefully with calmness and wisdom. And the last factor or benefit is when a person get reborn. Sometimes if he don't become enlightened, then there's a chance that he might get reborn in the Brahma world. So that's a higher world where you see the people are reborn in the Deva realms. So these are the 11 benefits of practicing loving kindness. Okay, so I think we'll start the guided meditation, because I think I dragged on a bit too long already. Okay, so I go through a loving kindness guided meditation. Okay, so please sit comfortably. Gently close your eye and take 3 big breaths. Breathe in and breathe out. Yep, and gently bring your awareness to your face. It's always very important just to learn to relax this body, especially after a hard day of work. So we start up with our body scanning first from the top of our head. Relax, be kind to our face, make peace with our face, and kindly, physically relax our face. Relax with kindness and peace. Relax. Now, we gently, kindly bring our awareness to our neck. Relax our neck with kindness and peace. Now we gently bring our awareness to our upper body. Relax our shoulder. Relax with kindness and peace. Now we gently bring our awareness to our arms, both our arms. Make sure is quite relaxed and rested. Kindly move it around. Not too tense, nice and relaxed. And kindly let go and relax our arms. Now we gently bring our awareness to our hands, and we kindly, gently relax our hands, our fingers. Relax with kindness and peace. Now, gently, we bring our awareness to our upper back. It should be nice and straight, not too rigid. Rest it comfortably, and we kindly relax our back with kindness and peace. Now, mindfully, we bring our awareness from our back slowly, gently downwards to our lower back, where it's sitting on the cushion. Please gently move it around, make it comfortable, and we relax with kindness and peace. Let me make peace with our back. Now, gently bring our awareness to both our legs. If you need to, move it around gently, kindly. Make it comfortable, and we relax with kindness and peace. Relax our legs. Now, we gently bring our awareness down to our feet, both our feet. If you need to move it around, please do so. Then we kindly, gently relax our feet, our sole, our toes. Relax with kindness and peace. Now, we gently, slowly bring our awareness from our feet to our legs, to our tummy. Make sure our tummy is nice and loose. Our clothes are not too tight. And we kindly, gently relax our tummy with peace and kindness. Now, we gently bring our awareness up to our chest. And we kindly, gently relax our chest with peace, with kindness, with peace and letting go. Relax and breathe in. Breathe in peace. Breathe out. Calm. breathing kindness, breathe out letting go, breathe in peace, breathe out kindness. Breathe naturally. Our heart is the feeling part. We feel calm, peace, kindness, relax, and letting go. Our heart is the feeling part, and our mind is the thinking. We think of kind things, and our heart we feel the warmth and the kindness. We generate peace and happiness with our thought and our feeling. As our body become calmly, kindly relaxed, we bring our awareness to our breathing. Breathing gently and breathing out calmly. As we become relaxed and our breath become calm and peaceful, then we can start the guided loving kindness meditation. We always start from within our heart and mind by saying, may I be happy and well. May I be free from suffering. May I be free from mental and physical suffering. May I abide in happiness and joy. May I forgive myself for any wrongdoing by body, speech, and mind. May I be happy and well. May I abide in happiness, peace, calm, kindness, and freedom from suffering and pain. We use the words and feeling just to calm the mind, calm our heart. Now, when you have loving kindness within your heart, then you can share it outwards. May my parents, my mom, my dad, my brother and sisters, my dear family members, may they be happy and well. May they be free from anxiety, worry, pain. May they be happy and well. May my friends be happy and well, free from mental and physical pain. May they abide in happiness and peace. So gently bring awareness back to your body and just relax your body. Relax more. Make peace with any tension or pain within this body, with kindness, gentleness. Gently bring your awareness back to your breathing. If you feel any sensation from the body, any warmth or tension within this body, just gently, kindly, just relax. Make peace with this body. With kindness and letting go. As we become more calm and peaceful, then you find your awareness of the body tends to increase. It's okay. We just calmly, gently, kindly relax and allow our body or the energy to arise and slowly disappear through letting go and kindness. Kindness towards this body that is in pain, old or tired. We make peace with this body. We are kind to the pain. And we let it go with kindness. And we gently bring our awareness back to our breath. Just breathing in peace and letting go. With kindness. when everything become calm and peaceful, we delight in peace. We delight in peace. We delight in joy of a peaceful mind. We delight in letting go. We delight in calmness and peace of mind. So please enjoy the next few minutes of calm, peace and freedom. And peace of mind. Okay, so we'll finish the meditation soon. After the three ringing of the bell, gently, calmly, kindly come out meditation. So when you come out meditation, always come out gently and then just sit down quietly and try not to move around too much, yeah? And just continue to enjoy the calmness and peace. So one thing I find with loving kindness, if I work too hard or I get in an argument with someone in the monastery, then if I go back and carry that argument or hurt, then find that meditation is not getting anywhere, it's not getting peaceful. Then sometimes I learn to forgive people for who they are. But most important thing is forgive myself, because we are human beings and we're all trying our best. And you see, we give a benefit or a doubt to people, because regardless if it's a monastic or a lay person, we all make mistakes. So loving kindness is learning to forgive oneself and other people for our mistake. So when we forgive other people and we forgive ourselves, then we become free. We don't carry things in our heart. Because if we carry things, the hurt in our heart, then basically it's like the Buddha say, it's like carrying a hot coal in our hand. We carry it, it burns our hand. And if we try and throw it at someone, basically it might miss. They might not get hit. So it's like picking out a hot coal. You pick it out, you get burned, and you try and throw it at someone. So there's no benefit to holding out anger. The Buddha say anger is like a sickness of mind. The mind is defiled. So if we develop loving kindness, then we find that we become more happier, more relaxed. Then we don't have a bad mind state. And when it's practiced well, then we live a life of peace, happiness. And what other people do is their karma, and there is their business. But what we can do is take care of our own body, speech, and mind, and create the loving kindness and the forgiveness to all beings. Then later on, people become more more friendly, and also trust will build up. Because we all know that we see someone that's always angry and frustrated, we just want to keep away from people that are all what we say like mentally unstable with defilements. And we all like to hang around with nice, calm, kind people. Yep. But at the end of the day, you get those 11 benefits where you sleep well, you wake up well, you have nice dreams of flying, and sometimes you can dream of in samadhi. So there are some monks in the monastery, if they have a lot of loving kindness, and when they sleep with a very peaceful mind, then they dream that they're meditating. And when they wake up, sometimes they wake up with a bright, radiant mind. So it becomes like the meditation is part of the dream. Yep. So instead of sitting down meditating, calm the mind, it just become automatic in the dream. Because the mind is pure, So meditation, loving kindness, is to purify the mind. The more we purify the mind, the more happier and more free we can become. So if you ever find that your meditation is not getting any traction, apply a bit of loving kindness, then things will settle down pretty rapidly. Okay, is there any questions?
So, this is a very nice opportunity. If you have a question about the talk, or if you wish to share some experiences, or ask about your experiences with your meditation, it's a very good chance.
This will be my last talk. And on Monday, I'm flying to Victoria. So hopefully the restriction will lift. And if it lifts, then I'll fly over to Victoria and basically do some work and do some teaching there. But if the restriction is there, even better. So I'll go on quarantine for 2 weeks. So it's basically a 2 weeks retreat. So I quite like when there's restrictions. So coming back here from Victoria last time, I had to go for quarantine for 2 weeks. So it was a nice quiet time to do a 2 weeks retreat. So if the quarantine is still there, then I'll fly over to Victoria and go for another 2 weeks retreat. Yeah, by myself.
Sounds wonderful, Ajahn. We have some questions in the chat here for you.
Yes.
From Jim in Germany. He's just curious, but he would like to know whether you went directly from working in the mines to monastic life, or did you have a break after leaving the mines before deciding what you wanted to do in the next life?
Okay. I was basically, would say, very desperate at the time. I realized that my lifestyle wasn't helping me because it felt great to party and mess around with my friends. But when I go back to my room, my mind was a mess. It was like almost like addiction, constantly feeding the mind with substance abuse, drinking, smoking, and trying other illegal drugs. It's not recommended. But once I became a Buddhist monk, once I became a Buddhist, I stopped all that. Yes. So when I stopped all that, then I found I was happier because I didn't need all this substance to make me happy. But I found happiness was in my heart, not out in the world or take things, or feeding the senses. And after that, I went to Bodhayana Monastery when I took my leave and did more religious study and meditation. And I told myself, okay, I really want to become a monastic and really try this full time. And my parents say no. So I say, okay, I'll wait for 10 years. So I was still working in the mines for 8 years. But every time I took leave, I'll go and stay in the monastery for 1 to 2 months. No, sorry, 2 weeks to 1 month, and continue practicing my meditation and learning about Buddhism. So I did it for 10 years. And then I asked my parents if I can ordain. And they say no. And I say, when? They say another 10 years. I say, after 10 years, can I ordain? And they say, no, of course not. I say, wow, okay. Lucky I asked. After another 10 years, I ordained. And so I went ahead and ordained. But before that, I worked in the mines for 8 years, then started my own business for 2 years, roughly about 2 years, less than 2 years. Then I worked paying off my debt for 8 months. Then I went and joined the monastery. Yep. That was 11 years ago. Yep.
Thank you, Ajahn. We have Kathy would like to ask you a question as well. Kathy, yes. Are you ready?
Yes, I am. Thanks. Thanks so much for that beautiful meditation and everything. I absolutely found so much benefit in it. And I was just wondering, if someone from your past and has totally misunderstood you,
mm-hmm.
and hold a lot of like bitterness, mm-hmm. and ill will for you,
mm-hmm.
and does extremely harmful acts towards your body and your mind and your soul, and like they just want to sort of negate everything about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, what sort of attitude, as a, from a Buddhist perspective, should you have towards that person and that being? And should you, like, you know, send the loving kindness to sort of stop the anger and holding the anger in your hand with, like, the coal in your hand, burning your hand through, you know? I'm just trying to work it out in myself.
Okay. It is very difficult. So if you're in some kind of relationship or partnership, either at home or at work, there is always, we'll say, abusive and controlling people. So especially if they're not Buddhist, they don't keep the precept, they can be quite manipulating and use a lot of intimidation. So it does happen a lot in the workplace and also at home. And when that happens, sometimes the best thing to do is set boundaries. And if that does not work, then sometimes it's best to not to react. Because sometimes I find that in monasteries, sometimes it can get quite intense with new monks that first ordained. They can be quite wild with defilements. And once that happens, sometimes we have to learn to be very patient and just be quite forgiving. So in the monastery, it's a bit easier because we know that people are still running through, carrying a lot of baggage. So with monastic, it's not too bad. But sometimes with lay people that come and stay in the monastery, when things go wrong, sometimes they resort to the old conditioning. So there was a lay person that I was taking care of. So I was sometimes, my role is a guest monk. So I take care of guests in the monastery. And when there's argument in the monastery with another guest, and sometimes they don't like to be told what to do. But in the monastery, there are precepts to be kept. And we all have to work. And one of my job is make sure that the guests are working safely in the kitchen or in the workshop. And sometimes if I ask them not to use their equipment or to wear safety equipment, if possible, if they're using a chainsaw or using some dangerous tool. And they might feel like I'm trying to tell them off, but my intention was always just to make sure that they work in a safe environment. Because of my training up in the mines, I was a safety rep, so I know quite a bit on safety. So if I see any guests that stay in the monastery that's using dangerous equipment, that might harm themselves or other people, then you see, I have to like basically just tell them not to do it, or maybe tell them off not to use the machine. It might be too dangerous because the monastery can be liable if they hurt themselves. And we may get sued by the family members. And sometimes by being a bit too direct, the guests might explode in rage and start screaming and shouting. And when that happened, I just have to explain, no, this is not on. And safety is very important. And sometimes he might start pointing finger at me and say, "You are the problem. You are controlling me." And start screaming and shouting. But always maintain calmness. And explain why not to continue working when it's a very unsafe environment. Yep. So it is very difficult when you're dealing with people that has got a lot of rage and anger. Then sometimes the next day, I just be nice to that person. And after a few days, it go back to normal. Then later on, I found that it came from a very abusive family. Yeah? And his dad was basically abusing him when he was a child. So it brought a lot of his conditioning. So when I, in the monastery, I tell this guest not to use this machine or stop using it because it's not safe. You should not do things like that. You might harm yourself and hurt other people. So that tend to trigger his hurt from his childhood. Yep. So then he becomes very aggressive. So as soon as I see that happening, I have to stop and just calmly let him basically vent his anger, his frustration. It's difficult, but sometimes you have to just almost bite your tongue and just let him vent it out. Let's just calmly explain to him. Because sometimes I find that if I treat him as a friend with respect, you see, they do change. Slowly change. So sometimes I don't understand why some people are so aggressive, but later on when he becomes relaxed and open up, then I found from his background he got a really bad background of a lot of abusive behavior by his family members and partners. Then basically a lot of compassion arise in my heart. Yep. So I still in contact with that guest, and sometimes I will basically ask him, when are you coming back? Come back, the monastic, we miss you. Come and help out in the monastery. Yeah. So he does have his moment, but he knows that in the monastery he's well protected, it's quite safe, and the monks are quite forgiving. Yeah. Because sometimes it's hard when you shout and scream at. And that's why the meditation is very important. So when you calm your mind down and develop loving kindness, then you realize everyone in the world is suffering. We all grow old, we all get sick, and we all die. So sometimes you have to reflect, every being that we see through our eyes will get old, will get sick, and they will die. Yep. But the most important thing is we always have to learn to give forgiveness. So when we forgive someone, and we respect someone, they will grow. But if we want to tell them off or blame them or punish them, they won't learn anything. So it is very hard. It's not easy. Because I think my experience up in the mines, when you have so many men living together, it can be quite aggressive. So when I start learning meditation, I learn to let go of that hurt. I don't carry it on, so I don't become another victim. Yep. So it's not easy, it's very difficult. But you just have to keep on learning to let go and forgive. And please set boundaries if you can. Yep. Because we're not a doormat. And if things get out of hand, set boundaries and basically just walk away. Okay.
Thank you, Ajahn. And I think that also, what you've just said also answers a point that Rachel was just put in the chat, which is, at what point does someone leave an abusive relationship instead of sending loving kindness and putting up with it? Because there is considerable domestic violence in our society currently.
Yes, it's getting more and more common because there's more and more people in the world, and people are basically getting brainwashed by the media, by society and other people. I mean, I thought it wasn't that bad, but sometimes when I look into documentary, why people do things like that, because sometimes I look at other monastic in other tradition that's doing all this abusive behavior. And I was going, geez, these are monastic. They should have a very high standard. But basically, some of them are out of control, just doing really crazy stuff, like abusing people. And what they do is they just move those monastic from place to place, and the abuse continue. Oh, I mean, I'm so glad for the Buddhist precept, we have 227 rules And one of the rules is a Buddhist monk should not be alone with another lady of the gender, regardless how old they are. Yep. So for a Buddhist monk, if there's a lady or a child, there must be another man around. So that way there's three people. Because when there's only two people, then all kind of abusive behavior may happen. Yeah, it's something very difficult, and it's becoming more of a problem these days. So what can we do? That's why for monastic, it's very important for them to stay in a good monastery. Then you have other monastic around. And a monastic should not be associating too much with lay people, because if they associate too much with lay people, then the defilements can arise in the mind, especially with the officer gender. Yeah, that's why monks, we spend a lot of time alone in the forest, just practicing and meditating and understanding the defilements in our mind. And for most Buddhist monks, we should not go out teacher until we have 10 years in robe. So once we have 10 years in robe, then we can teach and basically help to run and set up other monasteries. But before that, you continue to practice in solitude, alone. So the monks here, you see, we spend maybe 1 hour to 4 hours with a group, but most of the time we're just alone practicing. So that way we burn out the defilements. Yep. Because I do admit, the sexual desire is one of the strongest defilements for a human being. I mean, even myself, I find it was very difficult to let go of those desires. But the more I can stay celibate, the more I let go, then the more free I became. But for some monastic, it is very hard for them to let go, especially if the samadhi is not doing well. So, yeah, so this kind of abuse do happen, and it's become very common. Jeez.
It's the most difficult, most complicated problem in society.
Yes, yes.
John, we have just one more point. Could you tell us a little bit about Newbury Monastery?
Okay.
Ajahn Brahm is asking for donations of bricks or money to build the monastery. Could you tell us something about this project?
Okay.
It's a totally different topic.
No worries. I'm happy to talk about it. So Newbury Buddhist Monastery is a new monastery, and it was established in 2014 in September. So I went there to support my friend that was a head monk. So he was there, he was basically just overworked, and he burned out, and he resigned after 1.5 years running the monastery. So he basically gave it up to me to take care of the joint. And I told myself, geez, this is going to basically almost, I think my practice is going downhill. So, but luckily I told myself, I'm still quite a junior monk. At the time, I only got 4 reins. I came over there to support my friend because he was struggling a bit and overworked and burning out a bit. But Ajahn Brahm did tell me that if I need to, I come back and just do more practice here. So every 6 months, I'll come back to the monastery, Bodhiyana here, and just let go of baggages that I carry. Supporting the monastery over there. But luckily, Ajahn Brahm said we can have more monks there. So we've been sending more monks from Bodhiyana over there just to support that community. Because that is a mixed community of monks, nuns, and lay people. So we have one property divided into 3 sections. So you have 1 section for monks, 1 section for nuns. And this year, we're building 1 section for lay people. But in the beginning, it was an old motel and a film set where they filmed like The Man from Snowy River and a couple of different movies and TV series. So, but because it was a old motel, so we're not restricted by how many people we can have in the monastery. So at the moment, the plan is to have about 80 plus monastic and also lay people in the same property, because it's zoned as a motel, so we can really establish that place. So my friend, the head monk, it was a really good idea that he looked into acquiring that property. So he looked over 100 properties in Victoria and found that was the ideal location. But starting a new monastery from the beginning is always a lot of work and a lot of hardship, especially if you have monks, nuns and lay people in one property, because we all like staying in the motel in different blocks. So when you have lay people, monks, nuns and lay people staying all together, it can be really out of control sometimes. But luckily, last 2 years, the monks' monastery was built, so the monks moved over and have their own monastery. And and after that, when that happened, everything became more stable, because the monks and nuns don't have to interact too much. So the monks have their own quiet place to practice and to run the place, and the nuns have their own place. But this year, we're building a retreat center, and it will be the next jhana grove. So we have one jhana grove here and one jhana grove in Newbury Buddhist Monastery in Victoria. So we will have two retreat centers. So that will be exciting. So in the future, we give more opportunity for lay people to come and practice there. Yep. And there will be more retreats running. The retreats here are pretty full most of the time. You see, within 1 or 5 minutes, it's fully booked. So in the future, we have 2 retreat centers. So that will give more opportunity for people to attend more retreats. Yeah. And I think once the retreat center is built in Victoria, that will be one of the best retreat centers in Australia, because it will be built to a very high standard, where the walls, the ceilings will be well insulated. It'll be nice and quiet, and there's floor heating. But in Newbury Buddhist Monastery, in winter we get snow there, up to maybe 2 inches of snow. So the monastery is built to the highest standard, where it's nice and quiet, and also quite warm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So if you look,
thank you very much.
You're welcome. If you Google Newbury Buddhist Monastery, you see our website there.